Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I'm joined by Sarah. Sarah, how's it going?
No, very well. Sadly, other colleagues, load shedding is my opportunity.
Indeed, there is much electricity is hard to come by these days. Well, I think we all have it at the moment, which is once again a miracle. And of course, we're also joined today by Mr. Chris Hutton. Chris, how are you?
Hey, Nick, Sarah, doing well, thanks. Yeah, you've just jinxed us now, so let's see for how long we can keep going. Let's get in all the topics now in the next 5 minutes.
Indeed. All right. So first, a quick word from our sponsor. And once again, this week, we are sponsored by Trendy Trees. Trendy Trees is the leading luxury Christmas specialist. Buy a Christmas tree and enjoy it in your home or office for years to come. Or hire a Christmas tree and Trendy Trees will deliver, assemble, and decorate it for you, which is very nice. Visit trendytrees.co.za, your Christmas decorating specialists who are located in Cape Town, Johannesburg, and Plettenberg Bay. We thank them very much for sponsoring us. Once again, there'll be a link to them in the description of the show. And as someone who is a fan of Christmas but has absolutely no creative ability, I really appreciate the fact that they'll decorate the tree for you, because I'm not capable of doing that well. Also, before we start, we should talk a little bit about possibly some of the biggest news, but we're going to save it for tomorrow when we have Gabriel Krauser on the show, because I think he will speak to it with the right fury and passion. But there have been two draft laws that have been pushed forward to the next stage of the legislative process. And this is, of course, the expropriation bill, which was halted a few days ago, but once again has been re-examined and pushed through the committee, and the land courts bill, which has been approved by the Justice Committee. So those are now going to the National Assembly, where they'll be voted on. So the next stage of the battle continues, and it looks an awful lot like they were suspended for a few days while Cyril was hobnobbing with all of the world's leaders. And he didn't want to perhaps be asked an embarrassing question by any of the free market economies of the world as to why he was going to abolish property rights in South Africa. But anyway, that's very much for tomorrow. Let's get on with our few stories of today. First one is the incredible amount of money that the government spends on protecting itself, or at least specifically its high-ranking members. So yesterday, Cyril Ramaphosa, in response to a question by DA leader John Steenhuisen in Parliament, has come out in defense of the 2 billion rand spent by the police to provide security to members of the cabinet and other top-ranking politicians. At the same time, I think there's another 6 billion spent in total on VIP protection. So that's quite a lot of cash being spent on simply protecting our politicians. Ramaphosa said it's a well-established principle in jurisdictions around the world that the state should provide adequate protection to officials whose personal safety may be at risk by the virtue of the positions they occupy. He said the budget for the VIP protection services only accounted for less than 2% of the total SAPS budget and provided comprehensive protection to himself, the deputy president, former presidents, former deputy presidents, visiting heads of states and their spouses. They had also extended VIP protection services to 62 national dignitaries, including 28 ministers, 34 deputy ministers, the Speaker of Parliament, the Deputy Speaker, the National Council of Provinces chairperson, the Deputy chairperson of the National Council of Provinces. Were also 124 provincial delegates, including the 9 premiers, 9 provincial legislature speakers and their deputies, 87 MECs, as well as a number of foreign dignitaries who visited the country. At the same time, the DA also went on the attack against him and Bheki Cele, the police minister, for apparently spending 600 million rand on catering and accommodation for the police since February of 2018, where during the same period, SAPS reduced its frontline personal detectives and reservists by significant numbers. So, Sarah, let me start with you. Is the president's defense, does it hold any water? Is it really a legitimate expense to be spending all this money on VIP protection of our senior politicians?
Well, the president thinks it is. We have the problem in that we have one of the largest cabinets in the world, We haven't reduced it by much. That was one of the things Ramaphosa promised to do. And as a consequence, we're basically providing protection for all sorts of people. We don't know whether, he said, you know, it's a practice worldwide. Well, let's have some details about that practice. To what extent do they, you know, these millions of people that we are supposedly protecting, A, do they compare with worldwide averages? B, do they need any at all? Even what Ramaphosa has, is it adequate? Is it more than adequate? Is it obscenely adequate? All I know is that I think in the climate we're in, where you and I were talking about our feelings towards the extent to which our lives have completely been upended by the government in almost every sphere, you can probably assume that it's not justified, that the scope of people that it applies to is too wide, that they could all do with less. I mean, most people wouldn't even know who some of these people are, and unless, of course, they want their positions and they might assassinate them. But, you know, in politics, you take your chances. So, I don't know. It's just so appalling, you know, between the spend on the VIP protection and I think all of us have a visceral reaction when a blue light brigade comes past, and the police minister spending hundreds of millions of rands on, I don't know, Kentucky Fried Chicken, including over the COVID period, as you said, when we weren't allowed to go into restaurants, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's actually symbolic of what is so very wrong with the government, and I think it's symbolic of what's wrong with Cyril Ramaphosa. I think he's he's not worthy at all.
I think that's exactly the point here, is that this is kind of quite typical, I think, of how Cyril often deals with any sort of controversy. He releases a statement which sounds very reasonable and is sort of vaguely condescending. It says, "Ugh, you know, this is just all a big fuss about nothing. This is completely normal." Mm. But the devil is in the details. Mm. And I'm sure, you know, we don't have all the data we'd like on this, but it doesn't take a genius to think that perhaps many ministers have too many bodyguards, or that their blue light brigades have too many cars in the convoys. I remember that, you know, there was a point during the height of apartheid when there were many organizations in the country looking to kill apartheid prime ministers, you know, for oppressing the South African people, and they had convoys of two or three cars with which they travel around the country. And now we've got ministers from a party which enjoys a majority of the vote, driving around the country with like 12, 20 car convoys with blue lights and huge numbers of bodyguards. So I think, yeah, it's very likely that we are spending far too much per person, never mind overall. Chris, what do you make of this? I mean, you know, there's so many problems with SAPS right now. There's the DNA backlog and the fact that the labs aren't working properly. There's the lack of police training at the moment. There's a strike by the Police and Correctional Services Union, Pop Crew, who are complaining about the pay and conditions that police work under. And that's for the deficiencies of the police. They have an incredibly difficult and awful job in South Africa, such a violent society, and many of them just don't have support or backup. And at the same time, you know, we're throwing all this money away on our massive cabinet. What do you make of all this?
Yeah, and as always with destructive, at best ineffective government policy, it is poor South Africans who are suffering the most. They can't afford private security, for example. They can't, they don't have access to those cabinet resources to try and get blue light services and blue light brigades and that sort of thing. It also points to, I think, the prioritization of quote unquote easy targets. So doing roadblocks on William Nicol, for example, so you can try extract bribes versus combating drug networks or other illicit black markets kind of thing, and actually trying to impact crime in the country, you go after softer targets. So indicative of, I think, government as a whole's attitude towards citizens, that their government is insulated from the destructive effects of their own policies. They continue to live very good lives. As with rolling blackouts, where ministers live, those areas are not load shed. They don't have to worry about the decline of Eskom as a result of the ANC's ideological and policy choices. So I think another example of just how out of touch the current government is with citizens' lived reality on the ground. I mean, we when someone talks about their lived experience, we can roll our eyes and we can say, oh, you know, it's just subjective, et cetera, et cetera. But these are the concrete issues that people have to deal with, and they face these difficulties on a day-to-day basis, and the state can't help them in any substantive way.
Right. And at the very least, you know, we talk about real reform does need to come to the police and to spending. And I often take the view that some of these stories about, oh, you know, so much is spent on MPs, so much is spent on ministers, can be a bit overblown, because at the end of the day, it's not a huge amount of the total budget. But at the same time, there's a sort of symbolic aspect to it, which is that this is, you really don't need 12 bodyguards. If you're a minister, you maybe need one. Mm-hmm. It would I think make a lot of South Africans feel less at sea if you weren't throwing away money on accommodation. Sorry, any final thoughts on this?
I think what Cyril's statement, both the tone of it and the content, shows an absolute contempt for ordinary people. And I can only assume that some of the high levels of protection are to protect ministers who have been involved in nefarious crimes and deeds, and they expect to be offed by the opposition somewhere, you know, another mafia grouping somewhere else. So it's really the hypocrisy is just top class. It's peak stuff, and it's rather revolting.
Definitely. All right, let's move to our next story. And this comes from Zimbabwe, where the ruling party ZANU-PF has expressed its incredible gratitude to South Africa for taking the issue of what it calls illegal sanctions imposed against Zimbabwe directly to the White House. This follows Ramaphosa's discussion with Joe Biden, when apparently one of the topics that was mentioned was the sanctions on Zimbabwe and its government. And Ramaphosa reportedly said to Joe Biden that this embargo and the sanction were adversely affecting the economies of the entire SADC region and should be removed. This was praised by ZANU-PF, said that a spokesperson for ZANU-PF said, "These sanctions have been devastating to the growth of Zimbabwe. To have President Ramaphosa take that bold stance and tell Joe Biden in his face that these sanctions are damaging not only to Zimbabwe but the region, it's a good thing. It's clear that the dictum is, you are my brother's keeper. Thank you, South Africa. Thank you, Cyril. You are a big brother on the African continent. You took a lead on this issue based on principle, brotherhood, and neighborhood. We are very happy that the voice of South Africa and its weight, recognized on the international forum, has been spoken by South Africa. We hope that President Biden does the correct thing and goes on to lift the sanctions against Zimbabwe." Sarah?
I could watch Chris's face, but I think we had the same thought, is that the floweriness and the excessive verbiage that was expressed in that statement makes you realize that the sanctions do not affect the whole region. They only affect him and his ministers, and that Ramaphosa probably said, "Joe, I was going to mention Zimbabwe, the sanctions on the Zimbabwean cabinet, but you know, we'll pass for the time being." I mean, you know, honest to God, if that's what Ramaphosa said, then I mean, he can't go a lot lower in my estimation. But the fact is that he would be trying to lift sanctions on people who absolutely deserve to be sanctioned, and whose treatment and rule of their own people is monstrous. The sanctions don't affect the people at all. It's Ramaphosa playing into the worst of sort of, let's call them, regional politics. It's just, you know, what did he say? Did he also say, "Oh no, we're not going to do EWC in the land court"?
Well, he very much seems avoided talking about that question. Considering that the ANC suddenly stopped pushing that bill through the legislative process until 4 days after the meeting, and then just ran away.
I think it's nonsense. And I think if he did raise it, I think more the shame on him. He should have shown no support for the Zimbabwean government whatsoever.
So this is. It's just so frustrating. And it's one of the reasons why I have so much sympathy for Zimbabwean migrants who are here in South Africa, both illegal and legal, because this is exactly one of the ways that South Africa continues to keep their country poverty-stricken and destroyed. Why is Zimbabwe poor? Because the government encouraged the stealing and destruction of property rights across the country and destroyed the currency. And as a result, no one wants to invest there. And until ZANU-PF is gone, that will continue to be the case. And the longer that South Africa continues to support ZANU-PF in power by talking up for them when we get a seat at the table with the most powerful country in the world, they will continue to be a basket case, and Zimbabweans will continue to have to flee here to feed themselves. It is, it's just infuriating that on one hand you can say this, and then at the other hand you can go around and talk about how you're serious about illegal immigration. They're not serious. If they were serious about illegal immigration, they'd be doing everything they could to stabilize Zimbabwe so that Zimbabweans wouldn't feel the need to flee here. Chris, your thoughts?
Yeah, if there's one government that really doesn't have any moral grounding to talk about issues in Zimbabwe, it's the South African government, given their support for Mugabe over many years and the destruction of lives and livelihoods that that led to and still continues to contribute to. I think the main discussion between President Ramaphosa and President Biden was around renewable energy funding. I think that was the main issue. Everything else is around, as Sarah said, you know, flowery language and trying to hit the right notes, etc., etc. It also suits the South African government talking about brotherhood and all that sort of stuff. It suits it if other regional governments are either weaker or in disarray, because then South Africa can, by virtue of pulling others down and others being pulled down, can still feel as this big force on the African continent. To me, real brotherhood and caring for your neighbors, trying to help them ensure prosperity and the improvement of quality of life, not supporting governments that destroy their people's lives. So yeah, I think it can, it serves as another example to undermine the South African government standing on the international stage, continuing with abstaining from votes condemning Russia's invasion of Ukraine, for example. The trend is continuing apace. I just want to give a shout out to David in the comments about Minister Naledi Pandor channeling her inner WWE Undertaker at the Queen's funeral. I also got serious Undertaker vibes from that. I had flashbacks to Friday Night SmackDown when I saw her outfit.
Oh, now I'm going to have to go look up the pictures. I didn't see it. That sounds incredible.
And it's got the music in the background. It's just perfect.
Magnificent, magnificent. I must say, I really like that point, Chris, about so much of, and this is a problem with the African Union in general, has been this kind of mentality of crabs in a bucket all pulling each other down, because we all need to be equally as corrupt and equally as dysfunctional as each other. And if anyone breaks ranks, then that's the real sin. Abusing your people, destroying your economy, stealing money. Now, those are all forgivable. Overthrowing the government in a military coup has happened in several African countries over the past couple of years. Now, that's fine. You only get cast as a pariah by the African Union and the sort of the corrupt cabal when you break ranks and criticize the African Union or your neighbors. And then you're really a traitor who's working for the Western interests or whatever garbage. Very frustrating. Sarah, any final thoughts on this?
One thing, I think actually supporting Zimbabwe to President Biden is like a talisman, because the ZANU-PF has been in power for so long that I think the ANC is looking that if they can attach themselves to their cause, they too can be in power for longer. And so maybe there's a magic that they are imbued with.
Well, I'm sure ZANU-PF can tell you that while it's probably better to be king than not king, it's not great to be king of nothing. Which is, I suspect, what a lot of them are. Okay, let's move on to our next story. We've had some consumer price index info out for August, and it shows that the rate of inflation has slowed down a little bit from 7.8% to 7.6%, which is still very high. It was last this high around 13 years ago, which is pretty crazy. There is a discussion around the world now, as a lot of countries are beginning to see at least slowdowns or halts in inflation, that maybe inflation overall is coming to a bit of an end, and that we're heading back towards the normal levels of, I don't know, 2, 3, 4%, depending on what country you live in. I've heard this narrative both in South Africa and the US. Chris, for South Africa and also for the world more broadly, do you think that inflation has peaked, or do you think we're still going to see more price increases going forward?
I don't think it's peaked. And my main reason for saying that is that money printing hasn't stopped. That to me is still the fundamental cause of very rampant hot inflation. The money printing that happened as a result of stimulus programs by governments during COVID-19. that hasn't, the US, for example, is doing some tightening, but not to a substantive degree. And there's going to be pressure on governments such as the US, for example, to continue those spending programs as they head into elections, different election cycles. They can't take away that support that they provided. They need to continue to appeal to the voters in that way, especially. And then just another reason for thinking it hasn't peaked is a lot of sticking points, a lot of driving forces behind higher prices and high inflation. So still oil supply issues. You've still got ongoing conflict. You've got supply chains looking a little bit better at the moment. For example, container prices are going down, but I think that's because consumer demand has ebbed a little bit. When that ramps up again, you're going to have container shortages, which again means higher costs and higher issues with shipping around the world. In the South African context, we're a lot more reliant on imported goods because, again, our government has effectively destroyed manufacturing and industry. There's no reliable electricity, so then you're more exposed to imported inflation. When the dollar strengthens again, the rand doesn't go as far as it used to, so we're more exposed to those issues. Today we should have the new announcement from the US Federal Reserve around its rate hike. Most economists are thinking 75 basis points, some are going for even 100, and then tomorrow we'll have the South African Reserve Bank also announcing its latest hike, which will be a hike. It won't be a reversal. So expect to see that going forward. And just for South African consumers and citizens, you'll see a little bit of easing in terms of the fuel price, for example, but diesel prices are going to continue to go up. So that affects trucking because we can't rely on our railroads to move consumer goods. And then you're also going to run into inefficiencies and uncertainties around policies such as expropriation without compensation, again, driving up business uncertainty, consumer costs, consumer goods, et cetera, et cetera. Just a last point, two of the brightest lights with the South African economy are agriculture and mining. But you're going to see, I think, more pressure on agriculture. For example, it's becoming more difficult for farmers to move their goods around the country and out of our ports. So where are they going to pass those costs on to, in all probability, onto consumers?
Right. And with regards to mining, a country like China, which consumes quite a lot of minerals, has been messing about a lot with their economy recently with their continued insistence on a zero COVID policy, mm-hmm. shutting down pieces of their economy. And so slowdowns in China might also rebound on us here with us not being able to sell enough stuff. You did mention rate hikes there, but you don't think that will be enough to combat the inflation, Chris?
Not necessarily, because we're focusing too much on monetary policy and not on fixing the other structural issues that result from policy. So the other sticking points that increase business costs, that increase the costs that they passed on onto consumers when it's more expensive for them to manufacture their goods. In the South African context, for example, food and non-alcoholic beverage prices were up by over 11% year on year. So yes, there's that slight, the slight,
and this is bigger increase in terms of
overall inflation, petrol, but not food inflation.
Right, and this is despite petrol starting to come down in terms of prices. Although diesel, as you mentioned to me before the show, is still very much going up. Mm-hmm. Sara, what do you make of this inflation story? I mean, I think that the political consequences of this could be quite intense. Inflation generally is not good for ruling parties.
Well, particularly for our ruling party, because all of the immiseration that we talk about that has contributed to raised inflation rates, other than the effect of what's happening globally or Ukraine and Russia, the rest of it comes down to the governing party. And I've kind of wondered why people have been so bullish about sort of inflation reaching peak, because those very policies that are destructive of so much, surely they haven't fed all the way through the system. As Chris points out, you're looking at an increase of 11%. But diesel going up, still going up, and it's going up because it's in high demand. And the high demand are, the provision of electricity, having to use way too much diesel. But of course, it's trucking, which has to use diesel. That goes up. Costs go passed on to the goods that are produced by the people using the trucks to move the goods to the consumers. I think you'd have to see the government actually do something really worthwhile. And it's like, we just keep digging.
Indeed. We've had this discussion a little bit on Monday when we talked about load shedding, just sort of in this endless groundhog day of policy where we know what the problems are. We know at least how to begin fixing them. But government just continues to insist that no, it's got a new operational strategic plan to sort out everything that doesn't get done, and then 3 months later, there's a new plan. Oh, it's all
and the 20 old plans and
yes. Okay, let's move on to our next story and our last story for today. And this is quite an interesting one, and I think one that can be very much read as good news. It depends how cynical you are, I suppose. But several high-ranking police officials and crime intelligence officials have been arrested over the last couple of days in relation to a 54 million rand police tender, which had major irregularities. One of these suspects is the former National Police Commissioner, Khumotso Phalane, as well as the acting head of Crime Intelligence Secret Fund, a police colonel who's the head of crime intelligence in the Free State, and several others as well. The suspects were arrested in Durban, Bloemfontein, and various areas around Pretoria. And two of the suspects were arrested while they were boarding domestic flights at OR Tambo International Airport. So that's pretty big stuff. The former police commissioner who was arrested has had a whole bunch of corruption allegations against him over the years. He was in the position from 2015 to 2017, and eventually he was suspended due to the sheer number of corruption allegations against him. What do we make of this, Sarah? Is this we're seeing some arrests of people?
You know, we are seeing arrests. We're certainly seeing exposure. And if the citizenry could eat the extent of the exposure that the governing party and its ministers and its deputy ministers and its crime investigator unit, etc., whatever, people would be well fed. And it's about the only sucker we get is knowing that these people have been exposed and are being arrested. You know, it almost does. We can't even go as far as wondering whether they'll be prosecuted or not. But a lot of what's coming out, it's the detail. The rest is important, but it's the detail upon which we already knew something. We already knew about Polanyi. So in that sense, it's not that great. But it's like a small step. You've got to step. You know, one of the things you have to do in fixing the police is get rid of the crooks in the police. I really haven't got much to say other than the fact that everyone is apparently stealing. But just a little shout out to our audience members who mentioned Gayton McKenzie. They will be very pleased to know, and I just happened to see this little news item saying that Gayton McKenzie begs Eskom to let him help with the electricity crisis.
That would certainly, I don't know if that would fix Eskom, but it would certainly make Eskom more interesting. Chris?
I want the not so interesting guys in plaid shirts and jeans and gray hair who can actually fix Eskom.
Yes, no, definitely. Chris, what do you make of this story? You know, the optimistic reading of it is that, you know, as Sarah says, we're actually seeing some people get arrested, and these are senior people in the police, which is even better to see them arrested, because this is exactly the kind of people we can't be having suspected of corruption and associated with the police. It could be seen as a cleaning of house. Alternatively, if you're very cynical and grumpy, you could view this as simply the Ramaphosa faction cleaning out Zuma acolytes from the police force to replace them with their own. What do you make of this?
Well, let me not be accused of being cynical at any point in my analysis. But it depends on your definition of success or actual prosecution. Is it an arrest warrant? Is it someone being put in a cell overnight? Is it someone appearing in court? Or is it them being put away for 10 to 20 years, for example? Is that, where do you measure whether you think actual change is taking place and actual accountability? Or do you cling to the smokescreen of arrests, quote unquote, and this helping, and look, Cyril is serious about cleaning up things? I think your thesis around putting in his own people or people associated with him or linked with him is a much, much stronger thesis. I do think as the ANC becomes more desperate before 2024, you'll see various ways of patronage networks trying to retain control. Because for as long as they're still in power, they can retain the influence from that and the financial benefit. So that's my more realistic reading of it. Perhaps call it cynicism, but I think it's simple self-interest and incentives. You're going to want to retain control for as long as possible. So you're not going to implement those reforms that hold the people accountable now and make sure that you might be put in jail in the future as well.
I think there's been quite a lot of fear in the Ramaphosa camp that the anti-Roma opposer side, call it the Zuma faction or whatever, has too much influence in crime intelligence in particular. And so I'm not surprised.
There is intelligence left, yes.
Right. Well, I think there is. It's just all used to cause mischief or spy on ANC internal factional rivals and that kind of thing. I mean, I wonder what our spies do except bug the offices of Lutuli House so they can report on each other. But
they bug the bugs. It's meta bugging.
Yeah, exactly. I don't even know what our intelligence services do. But it remains to be seen whether this heralds more changes. Still, regardless of what the reason for the arrest of these guys is, I think it's very good. And hopefully there's a speedy trial and we can get some conclusion to these corruption allegations. Mm-hmm. And that is all the time we have for today. So thank you very much for listening to us on the show today. We hope that you enjoyed it. And we will be back tomorrow on the Daily Friend Show. And it's probably going to be a banger because we're going to be talking about the great threats to property rights in the country. So keep an eye out for that, and we'll see you then. Cheers, everyone.